Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, let me grab the headphones. I'm going to get dialed into the studio. Get these dogs to shut up. Oh, goodness. I better close the window or the neighbors are going to get mad. Hope the guests call in tonight. I wonder if anybody's going to call in. Well, let's do this thing.
It's Rated G Radio, and this is your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Rated G Radio. And everybody says, why is it Rated G Radio? Because it's not like G-rated radio. G is for Garrett, so it's Rated G Radio for me. But we usually don't swear or do anything inappropriate on the show. We get really excited sometimes, and tonight we're going to be excited because Tracy Hall with Project Independence is going to be on the line with us in just a couple of minutes, and we're going to be learning all about some exciting things that they are doing in their organization to help people in Orange County in Southern California. So that will be really, really cool to hear her in just a couple of minutes. Later in the show, we, of course, got headlines and celebrity birthdays and all of that fun stuff that we'll be talking about, including The View, Dancing with the Stars, and Mariah Carey. There's going to be all kinds of stuff that's going to be going on. I'll also tell you about a really cool lunch I had today with Hollywood director Robert Rollins and some projects that we're working on, so you'll hear all about that and more. And I see a caller that has called in. I'm going to put a little song on for just a second just to verify who it is. I'm hoping it's Tracy. We'll be right back. Hold on, everybody. This is going to be a little blurb of music.
I close my eyes and tell myself when I feel judged by someone else that love, love, love begins with me. I dig in deep and must reveal the secret for my heart to heal. No lies, lies, lies or make believe, but my stones and sticks I pitch them away. Get in the way of myself again. And then
that was a little Margot Ray Colors. Margot Ray, remember, she was our special guest on the Friday Night Dance Party a couple of weeks ago, and her song Colors is going up the adult contemporary charts right now. It is, I think, in the top 10 as of this week's Billboard, so thanks to Margot Ray for being on the show. She's actually married to Ron White. You'll know him from the Blue Collar Comedy Tour, and Tater Salad is one of the programs that he's recorded, and I also got to watch his latest DVD from 2013 a couple of weeks ago. Very, very funny. And if you like that type of humor, you will get a huge kick out of that. Quick programming note leading up to tomorrow night's Friday Night Dance Party, we're going to have music sensation Joseph Eid on the show. We're going to be doing an entire two-hour behind-the-scenes behind the music story with Joseph, and we're going to be playing the entire album of his called Human. And I think that you will enjoy not only his story, but his music as well. Very talented musician. He sings and writes and does all of his own stuff. I'll probably be putting a link up on the show page a little bit later tonight that will have one of his music videos that he just got finished doing for, what was it? It might be Human. I can't remember. It was really cool. I'll go look it up and put it back up there. But we'll be doing that in a couple of minutes. And so Joseph yesterday was like, are you sure you really want me on for the full 2 hours? And I said, Joseph, by the time you get on the show and we start going and we start talking about your music and introduce you and we talk about what inspires you with the music, the next thing you know, the 2 hours is going to be up. And you'll be going, holy cow, the show just ended super quick. Are you sure it's 9 o'clock? I'm like, that's exactly what's going to happen. So we're really excited that he's going to take time out of his schedule to do that. Into next week, we are going to have Kurgan Edward Stout from Orange County coming back onto the show next Wednesday, and he's going to be talking about all the things that he's been doing in the last year, including getting married. We'll have Dr. Annie Ulrich back on the show on Wednesday, September 3rd, and I've also got a whole host of other folks that we are firming up details on to come onto the show, including, and I just got the CD in the mail today, Mr. Eric Kamen, and he is promoting a new album he's got out called Serenades, and it's kind of like a combination of guitar, salsa, and like urban hip-hop type of music. It's going to be really wild and crazy, and we're really going to be excited to have Eric Kamen on the line in the next coming week. So get ready, folks, because we've got some great things coming up. And I think this is now Tracy. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you, Garrett.
How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. There was somebody else that was calling in from Orange County, but they were just on the listen mode, and I thought, it might be you. So I was playing a little bit of music for just a second, and I was going over to the caller.
I think we'll probably have some callers, too, so it'll be a fun show.
That'll be totally cool. So for the caller that's on there who didn't want to be talked to, I'm really sorry. I thought you might have been Tracy, so I just put them back on hold. But
you probably totally freaked them out.
They're like, somebody's talking to me. I don't know what's going on. Make the man stop. I just wanted to listen. So anyway, thanks for calling in and being here tonight. So how are you?
Thank you. I am doing well. I actually have my executive director here too, Deborah Marsteller.
Hi, Deborah.
Hey, Garrett. Thank you so much for having us on.
Well, I'm so excited to have you here. And usually for things like this, I do a ton of research, and then I try to be more up on the facts than usually my guest is. And I thought, you know what, tonight I'm just going to let you tell me about Project Independence and why this is such an important organization for people in Southern California. So before we get started with Project Independence, can you each tell listeners just a little bit about yourself and how you came to be part of that group?
Sure, I'll start. My name is Tracy, and I'm actually the Fund Development Manager for Project Independence, which is a newer position, and I have been working for this organization for about a year. But the really cool part of that story is that out of college, I graduated many years ago. I won't tell you how long ago. But I graduated, and I actually came and worked at Project Independence and provided direct services to our clients. And we do serve adults with developmental disabilities. And so I was working out in the field and actually stayed with the organization for about 6 years and then left and did some other things. And 10 years later, I came back. So this is my second round here at Project Independence in a different position, but I've just always had a passion for what we do here and a passion for our mission and also just the clients that we serve. It's really quite a joy to work with the people that we serve. We do work with adults with all kinds of different developmental disabilities, so that covers things like cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, autism, epilepsy, kind of a full gamut. And so we provide lots of different services. We provide in-home services. We're really about community integration, so all of our services are community-based, meaning that we actually work in their homes, teaching them how to live independently. Most of our clients live with roommates or alone, and we're teaching them how to cook and clean and do their finances and all those different things. And then we also offer supportive employment services, so we help them find jobs, keep their jobs, and be out in the community in that way as well. So coming back, I've just had great experiences coming back. Even just tonight, we were at a fundraising event, and a group of our clients were there, and it just reminded me of why I do what I do, because they're just a joy to work with. So I'm excited to be back after 10 years.
Now, so the event that you had today was like a bake sale?
No. We actually partnered with a local restaurant that did a one-day fundraising event with us, and so we basically were able to come with a flyer. It's actually still going on at Bodine Bakery in Costa Mesa.
Oh, and that's why I thought it was a bake sale. I apologize.
It's going on
until
8 o'clock tonight. And so all of the information's on our website. It's also on Facebook and Twitter right now. But if you brought a flyer, 20% of whatever you bought actually went back to our organization. So it was a really fun opportunity for us.
Wow. So how do you end up partnering with Bodine Bakery then?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I don't even know how he got my name, but one of their representatives, they're really interested in reaching out into the community and giving back, and so they actually have a community outreach person who reached out to me via email. We started talking, and he kind of told me what it was about, and I thought it sounded like a neat idea, and so we kind of hooked up about 6 weeks ago, and here we are tonight.
Wow. Well, congratulations. I hope that's been a big success for you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, Tracy, that was awesome. So, Deborah, how about you? What's your story?
Well, my story is quite lengthy.
Okay.
I've actually been with the organization for 35 years.
Wow.
And we had two organizations merge about 12 years ago, which is impossible to believe. And I started because I looked at it as a civil rights issue. People with developmental disabilities are just like you and I. They just maybe learn slower or have more impediments to their opportunities than the rest of us. And it was a big issue around people having opportunity for me. And I started with an organization called Vantage Foundation that really, our life dream is to close down our state hospitals. We call them developmental centers here in California, and there's just a handful left in California, and there are none in most other states, because if it's not a place you or I would want to live, it's not a place for people with developmental disabilities. And so a number of years ago, like I said, we merged with Project Independence, and so we took an organization that we started really on a different path to get people with the most significant challenges, the most difficult issues to face, into the community, and we merged with an organization, Project Independence, that worked on the other end with people who are living in their own apartments, working at their own jobs with whatever level of support they needed. And so we were able to bring that together because of this huge increase in people with autism. And what we wanted is to come up with ideas for people with maybe significant challenges, but with a lot going for them, and help them live in the community and work with the support necessary. So we're bringing our behavioral expertise in with the independent living and supported employment expertise and pulling that together to meet some of the increased needs of this burgeoning population. And it's been very successful the last 12 years because we had very similar values. Our organizations came together fairly easily. Now, I can say that 12 years later.
Sure. hindsight.
It depended on a lot of board member support, a lot of families jumping in and helping us, and, of course, staff that did three times the work as we work through the merger process. But now we're one organization, and we're much stronger and better able to meet the needs of a broad array of people. So
can I ask you a question, Deborah? So you've been with the organization, you said 35 years. When you joined the group,
and
when
I'm
you were about,
only 38.
I was going to say, when you joined the group as a toddler.
She said she's only 38.
Yep. So, you know, you started when you're working when you're 3 years old,
I'm
before child labor.
But
okay.
I've been here my whole life, it seems.
But so how have you seen just the needs and maybe the type of client change in that 35 years? Because you said you're seeing an increase of people with autism and things like that. And it's really more of a two-part question because I want to know where you've kind of come from, but how different groups or different people with needs have been blended into your organizations and how that's impacted what you do and how you serve people?
Well, as far as an increase, I think the big increase we're going to be seeing in the next 10 years, that's why we merged when we did, because we saw the increased numbers coming up through elementary school and high schools. We start working with people when they're 22. So as far as the changes, one of the things that is fabulous to see is a lot of our young adults, 22 to 30, are coming to us with a lot more skills because they have been integrated into regular classrooms all along. And we're also seeing this millennial group of young people that are in the community that have been exposed to people with disabilities their entire life. And so it's a much easier transition. When I first started working with Vantage in 82, and we started doing integrated work, employment in the community with our guys that had really challenging behaviors, and nobody was used to seeing people with disabilities. We would go in to do just community training, which at that point in time was unheard of to see people out in the community that had significant challenges. And it was a bigger impact. And now you see our guys everywhere. You see our guys at the grocery store bagging your groceries. You see them at Home Depot helping people. You see people doing volunteer work. And so in that respect, the biggest change has been the higher skills and the better acceptance of us and what we're about. We don't have to explain now like we did 30 years ago. Seriously, people would say, well, don't you have places for people like those? And you know, it just make you cry that
yeah.
they would talk to us like the people we were with didn't exist. Or didn't understand. And, of course, they did exist and they did understand, but we don't get that at all anymore. People assume people with disabilities are going to be a part of the community now.
And so how many people are you currently helping?
We have about almost 700 people in our three major programs. We have our living services, supported employment, and day program and behavior support. So about 700 altogether.
And that's all throughout Orange County.
And our living services, as Tracy was saying, is all in people's own apartments or homes. And we just go in with support staff to help them as minimally as necessary. So some of our guys just need help with banking. So we'll go in
okay.
and we'll help them figure out their monthly budgets, what bills they need to pay. No, they probably shouldn't buy that scooter on credit because they don't have it, and credit doesn't mean free. And then we do things is much more encompassing, where we help them with neighbor disputes or with how to get ready for work, how to manage their medicine, how to schedule their doctor's appointments, what is a healthy diet, and how to focus more on eating more green vegetables, less cake.
Less fast food, which
yeah.
is a huge obstacle.
Sure.
Very huge
sure.
obstacle. So depending on the needs of the people in our living skills program is how much support they get, anywhere from 5 hours a month to 28 to 30 hours a month of support.
Wow.
And then
yeah,
in our employment program, our job coaches actually work 100% with a person at their new job, working with the employer, like I said earlier, Home Depot, Sprouts, Hyundai, are great employers, where we'll go in and we'll spend a lot of time with coworkers, answering questions on how to relate, how to set up jobs, how to work with your supervisor. And then we fade back based on the needs of the person. And so once they learn their job and they're doing a good job, then we'll back off until perhaps they have a new job layered on, and then we could come back in and offer support again.
How cool is
we
that?
We also even help find jobs for clients. So today is a great example. This morning we had a job club where our job developer was working with a small group of clients that we serve that are still looking for employment. So they want to work. They have a desire to be productive and bring in their own money and be self-supportive, but so far they haven't been able to find a job. And so we have a job developer who works with them on all of their skills. And so today, for example, it's the job club goes for 4 weeks straight. The clients come in once a week for 2.5 hours. And today we had someone come in, a professional came in and talked about how to write their resume, how to have a cover letter. She gave good examples and bad examples of some of those things. We went over interviewing skills, how appearance is important, how you have to present yourself, how you even get in the door to get that first interview. And so it's really preparing them to not only get a job, but then also once they get the job, then that's when our job coaches will step in and make sure that they're actually successful at keeping that job.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, Tracy, Deborah, it sounds like a lot of the things that you're teaching really most people out there really need help with.
And, right, yes.
You know,
yeah, I learned
hearing so many things
today
that
with a professional.
Like,
I was like, oh, that's a great idea.
That's
a,
right. Okay, so,
yes,
wow, yeah. So how do you find employers that are looking to work with clients that you represent? You know, because you mentioned Hyundai and Sprouts and Home Depot, and I think that's just absolutely awesome.
Well, you know, word of mouth from happy employers is our best employer-to-employer contact, and that's our best resource. We also talk to everybody any opportunity we get like this, so we can say it's not a charitable thing. It is a win-win for both the employer and the people we support, because having our guys on the job actually there's really strong data that shows it increases morale at the workplace, it cuts down on sick leave and their overhead costs for other employees, because we bring such a value of diversity to the workforce. And it's really important for employers to understand that all they have to do is call us and we'll come out and we'll do an assessment of the worksite and help them determine what might be a good job fit. But, you know, it costs twice the annual salary of a worker, usually around $2,400 a year for an entry-level worker, just to recruit and train. And we take care of that because we'll do good job matches with someone that has the talent for the job, and they just need to be open to the opportunity. And it's win-win for everybody. But our employers love our guys. They tend to be in a good place for them, and so they're able to stay longer. It decreases turnover. They don't call out as often. They have much lower workers' comp costs. Everything about it, employers love. So it helps all the way around.
Well, and I'm guessing your clients are just like so thrilled to death that, you know, they've got something where they feel productive and valued and appreciated. You know, their self-esteem and, I mean, value of just contributing in their work environment has to just be like through the roof. So, I mean, this is just a huge win for everybody that gets to play here.
Right, right, exactly.
Right.
Because there's most of us define ourselves during our work years by what we do for a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people, it's one of the first things that is asked when you go somewhere, what do you do? And the people we support are just the same. They want to be needed and productive members of the community. And so the number one thing people say when you say, well, what are your dreams? And it's to have a job and to live in a good place and to have a relationship with people that care about you. And it's no different than the rest of us.
Right. And even the social aspect of having a job, we all know what that's like. And there's a natural built-in social aspect of when you are working that you build relationships and you have friendships and other activities come out of having that job. And so it's the same thing for the population that we serve.
Absolutely. So you said that people come to you starting around the age of 22. How do people find Project Independent? Do they just, you know, is it word of mouth or through community services or schools or churches? Or, I mean, before talking to you tonight, I didn't know about you.
Since 1969, we have legislation called the Latterman Act. And so from that legislation, unlike any other state in the nation, we have entitlement services. I know that's an ugly word, but for this population, it's been fabulous. And so we have regional centers throughout the state, 21 regional centers, that refer people into supports when they graduate from school. If you have a developmental disability, you can stay in school until the age of 22. And so at 22, usually people start transition services around 16 or 17. And then when they get out of school at 22, hopefully it's a smooth transition into adult services, which we are considered. So people hear about us from their schools usually. That's the transition program. at their high schools or college that they're participating in, through the Regional Center of Orange County, and through friends. A lot of people call me because they have a neighbor that has a disability and has always lived. I hear this so often. I have a neighbor, and they have a son that's lived with them his whole life, but they're very aged now, and they're concerned about what's going to happen to him next. Mm-hmm. And so we have this whole group of people from previous generations that really haven't availed themselves of all of the supports available in California. So we get referrals now of people maybe in their 60s or 70s, and their parents are in their 90s.
Right. Wow.
And the service, the level of support has changed from parent to child. And maybe the child doesn't have the skills necessary to take care of this aging parent. So we hear about that quite frequently, that just concerned community members.
And I guess that was going to be my next question, because looking on your Facebook page, you have an article that was posted a week or two ago about, it's a tale of two counties, the aging of Orange County, and how that's impacting your client base. Can you talk about the, because originally I thought, people will probably just come in, you get your job service, you figure out how to do the checkbook and stuff, and then you're good. But you probably have clients that are, lifelong.
Well, the aging issue is a really big one, especially the part about aging people with disabilities living with very aged parents. So anyone listening, please give me a call if you're in this circumstance, because our Regional Center of Orange County has taken this as a very serious issue, and the concern of people being at risk out there, especially in different Hispanic and Asian communities where the culture is to keep people at home and for the family to care for them, lifelong care, that isn't necessarily always available, even though it's the wishes of the family. So, now I've forgotten your question because I talked too long.
What happens? We've actually had
a lot of our clients who have been receiving services from us for 25, 30 years. And so we are dealing with the aging population right in our own organization. We're seeing their needs change, and we're having to keep up with that. And one of the programs that we actually have is called Supportive Living, and it's kind of an offshoot of independent living. It's the same concept, but the clients that are in supportive living are getting more care. And so whereas in independent living, maybe a staff comes in for an hour, teaches them something, and leaves, in supportive living, we actually have staff now that are staying the day with them, staying throughout the day, where several staff are having to come in to make sure that they're safe, to make sure that their needs are being met, their house is clean, their meals are happening, that they're eating healthy meals, that they're able to be safe in their own home, but still maintain some independence. And I think that's really the beauty of it, to know that we're not putting them in a home. We're not taking away their rights or their freedom or even their autonomy. They have some of those choices still built in, and they still are living in their own apartment, living by their friends, part of the community, but they're receiving the support they need. And so that's one of the things that we're doing a lot more of, is we're seeing our own clients that have been here for years that used to be very independent, and now they're having to move more over to our supportive living department. Still part of what we do, but it is changing, and now as we have more and more clients that are getting to that stage, it's something that we have to really look at, and it's definitely a challenge for us, because that means a lot more staff hours, a lot more services are going to be needed in the years to come.
One of our original people that started with our program, Mike, which isn't his real name, but he was living on his own for 30 years. And recently his mother had started developing an advanced form of Alzheimer's. So Mike has gone back and is living with his mother to take care of her. And it's not a situation that is working for anybody well. And so what we did was we met with concerned family members and have come in and, one, getting Mike back into the community, involved in some of our day programs. Since he is a senior as well, he's going to one of our senior programs. And because we have people in and out of the house where his mother lives, we're able to keep track of what's going on with her, mm-hmm. as well as kind of opening the door for some more in-home supports to come in and take care of some of her more immediate needs. So we try and collaborate with senior programs, with social services, with family members, as well as the different departments of our staff to make sure the whole person is taken care of, not just, okay, well, my gut is meds this month, so he's cool. You know, it's we have complicated lives, and
yeah.
we try and meet all of the needs.
So
as they change over a lifetime, right?
As a nonprofit organization, then that leads me to my next question. You know, as the needs change and the needs grow, they don't necessarily diminish. How are you raising money and doing things to, you know, keep the doors open?
Right. Well, thankfully, we do still have funding from the state of California. However, you know, with the cost of living going up, with so many things changing, it costs more and more to keep our doors open. And so that's one of the reasons why we have started to really diversify and look at different funding sources. And so we're doing a lot of things in the last few years that we weren't really doing before. And so that's one of the reasons I was brought on as the fundraising development person, was to start looking at some of those options that we have. So not only can we be successful now, but we want to be around 30 years from now as well. And so in order to do that, we have to continue to grow and expand and really look at where our funding is coming from, and also not be so reliant on one source of funding, which is a dangerous place to be. You stop getting state funding, what happens to us? And we don't want to ever have to shut our doors. It's too important what we do with all of our clients. And so one of the things that we have done is we've started to look at grants and foundations and things like that. And so we've really started to figure out how to write grants and how to really have a case for support, how to ask for our needs to be met in a way that people will understand and want to be able to give to us. And so there's different foundations and different businesses, corporations that are doing grants. And so we've really gotten involved in that in the last couple of years. Another thing that we do is we have fundraising events. We have a lot of little things that we do, kind of like we did tonight where I talked about the partnership with the restaurant. But then we also have our Walk for Independence, which is really our biggest event that we host every year. This year, it's actually our fifth annual walk, which is exciting for us. So we're really trying to expand and make it a bigger event this year. And so that's happening on September 27th. It really is our main fundraiser of the year. And we are having a walk at T. Winkle Park in Costa Mesa. And so it's a morning event. It starts at 8. People start showing up around 7:30 and goes till about 11:30. But it's really more than just a walk and a community event. It's really a celebration of how far we've come. And it's a time for our clients to all come together, our supporters to come together, our staff to all be there, and to really celebrate the work that we do, celebrate the clients that we serve and the independence that they are achieving. And not only that, but also health-related goals. One of the things that we have started is we have a healthy living program that started a few years back and now has been integrated into all of the services that we do. And it's an opportunity for us to really focus on a client's overall well-being, their health, their safety. Are they eating well? Are they exercising? What are they doing to stay healthy? And so our walk is also a celebration of that. And so one of the things we do is we have exhibitors. We have about 15 exhibitors at least lined up for this year that are going to be there giving out information, giving out fun, free giveaways to clients that are there, teaching them about health, teaching them about eating well, incentives for clients to come and be excited to be there. And so our walk is kind of one of our biggest fundraising avenues that we have, but we have really been looking at a lot of different things in order to be able to start just having that foundation outside of the state funding that we have.
Cool. Hey, and this goes – I'm going to kind of backtrack for just a second. You know, since
sure.
you talked about the different clients that you serve and the different – challenges that they have. How, and I'm sorry for asking, I probably should know more about this, but how do you tailor your education and your assistance programs to the quite diverse range of challenges that people end up having. Do you have people that specialize
in
one?
That's a great question, because a lot of times people overlook the idea that the support structure for people with autism, as an example, is quite different than what is necessary to support someone with Down syndrome or someone with other intellectual disabilities, because a person with autism can have a myriad of very complex needs that are wide-ranging. And so what we do is we have experts in behavior analysis, as well as people that are experts in housing and economic supports. It's the bureaucracy around Section 8 housing is a profession all in itself. Is trying to find affordable housing in Orange County, mm-hmm. as you can imagine,
huge
is
challenge,
a nightmare.
Yeah.
And developers get so much for so long, and then they can go back to standard rates of rent. So we have a diverse staff, and we bring in expertise as needed when somebody has something that is outside our range of expertise. But we have about 150 people on staff, and so that helps. And our turnover here is very low compared to the industry standard. So we're lucky to have people that have 20 years of experience working with different individuals in different populations.
We also work with the client's whole support circle. So we're not making these decisions, you know, in a vacuum. We have meetings with the clients where we have an intake meeting. Even for a client to join our program, we have an intake meeting where we get to know them and figure out what are the needs. What needs do they individually have? And what do their family feel the needs are? What do they feel the needs are? We ask the client very directly what they want from us, what kind of services they want to see, what their goals are, what their objectives are. We're not making these decisions for them. So we're working with them to figure out what path they want to be on and which services would benefit them. And that's part of also drawing in their family, drawing in the regional center. It's working with the whole support circle to see how can we make this be successful for them.
Do you have an example of maybe one of your favorite clients that you've had a chance to work with? I mean, probably everybody comes in to your program and you're like, oh, my gosh, you're my favorite now. But do you have some real
right.
success stories of people that
you
were
know,
just
actually,
like, boy.
I do. I have. It's so funny because I hear great stories, you know, being in my department where I get to tell the story of Project Independence. It's my favorite thing of what I do is I go out and take pictures and videos, and then I post things on Facebook and on our website, and I love telling the story. But honestly, it goes back for me to 10 years ago when I worked here as a direct staff. And anytime someone asks me what's my favorite story, even though I have all these other stories, I just always think back to a woman that I worked with as a direct staff when I was providing services 10 years ago. And we brought her in Project Independence, and she was about 50 years old at the time. And her mother, who she had lived with her whole life, had just passed away. And her brother, who was about 10 years older than her, had heard about our services and basically was like, is this even possible? You know, she has lived with my mom, our whole lives. She's never done anything for herself. My mom did everything for her. She never cooked a meal. She never washed her clothes. She had never done anything. And
wow.
So he came in wondering, is this even possible? Is my sister even able to live on her own, even with supports? And so with talking with her, with talking with him, we knew that it was possible. That's what we do. That's what we're here
uh-huh.
for. And so she did move out on her own with a roommate, and I was actually one of her first staff to work with her. And I just remember just those first few sessions of teaching her the most basic things and just the look on her face that she was able to do it. And she was really quite stubborn, and so she would even say, I can do that, and she would grab something from me and she'd start doing it, and I'm like, she can do it, but no one had ever given her the opportunity. And so I actually worked with her for about a year before I moved into a supervisor position, and I remember her brother, he would come to every single banking session we had. He wanted to be very involved, and he would sit across from me, and he was kind of a rough character. He was kind of tough on me and would say, well, what are you doing now? And why are you having her look at a budget? She doesn't understand that. And I would say, well, I hear what you're saying, but let's just give it a shot. I want to really try to explain it to her. Let's give her a chance, you know. And I remember the very first check that she wrote, where she actually wrote a check out to a grocery store, and he just said, well, why are you doing that? She can't do that. Nope, I think she can. Let's give it a shot. Let's try, you know. And every session was like that for the first 2-3 months. And then he finally started to kind of see that, oh, wow, maybe she can do these things. She started cooking for herself. She started cleaning her house. She started doing her laundry. She started writing checks, going to the grocery store. It really was, for me as a direct staff, it was incredible. It was an incredible experience to be part of a 50-year-old woman who had never done anything for herself. And so working with her, I mean, we obviously saw a lot of success, and it was really, you know, why we do what we do. But then 10 years later, I come back, and she was one of the first people I asked about. And I was like, oh, my gosh, is she still with our program? And the staff that I was talking to said, oh, yeah, she is. And, oh, her brother passed away last year. And so that same brother that I had worked with, you know, in that beginning, who he had no idea how she was even going to do this on her own, little did we know that, you know, several years later, now he would be gone. And he really was the last of her close family. And she is incredibly successful, living on her own still in an apartment with a roommate, happy, joyful, and more independent than we ever could have imagined. And so to think that we were able to do that, and now this family that she had is gone. And that's the reality of what happens in our lives, is that we can't always count on those things. And even though I know her family in the beginning, they had the right motives. They wanted to take care of her. They wanted to be there for her. But in the end, she really was capable of so much more than what they even knew. And so she, even though it's 10 years ago, she's who I always go back to, and she's still here today and still stubborn from what I hear. So,
what a great story. I mean, but you've given her freedom.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. And she's so spunky. Like, you saw when we started doing things with her, you just saw this whole other side of her where she wanted to take on more and more and more, because it was the first time in her life that someone gave her that opportunity.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Well, before we get to the end of our time together tonight, because at that point I'm going to say, tell us about how do people connect with you on social media and all that fun stuff.
Sure.
Tell us one more time about your event in September, and then is there any other last thing that people really should know about Project Independence?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you about the event. I'll let Deb do that last one.
Okay.
But our Walk for Independence and Health Fair, again, is on September 27th. It's very important because it is the main fundraiser that we do each year. It's from 8 to 11:30 at T. Winkle Park, which is in Costa Mesa. You can find out more about this event actually on our website, www.proindependence.org. All the information is there. We are also on Facebook, and so you'll be able to link to us through there as well, and that's just facebook.com/projectindependence. And we are on Twitter, too, at ProIndependence. So anywhere you go, you'll be able to run into our walk information. There's a lot of different ways to get involved. We are still looking for sponsors. That's a huge one for us to be able to meet our goal. We have a goal of raising $35,000 this year, so it is a big goal. So we are looking for not only individual sponsors, but even corporate sponsors. So if there's businesses out there right now listening, and this is something you're interested in and you'd like to support what we do, there are corporate sponsorships available where we'd be able to then do branding for you and put your information and your logo on our website and on our T-shirts and all those kind of things. So there's still that opportunity. There's opportunities for people to just come join us that day. It's only $25 to register for the event, and with that you get a T-shirt and breakfast and goodies and just a really good time. So we would love to have as many people as we can actually come out and walk with us that day, come out and be involved in the activities. And then we also do have even exhibitor opportunities. If there's any smaller organizations out there where you, especially if you're health and wellness related and you just want to get out and do a local community event, $25, and you can have a booth, a table, and a lot of people will be visiting you and learning more about what you do as well. And so there's just a lot of different ways to get involved at our walk on September 27th.
So real quick, how long is the walk? Is it like a 50-mile walk, or is it something?
Everybody asked that, I know. Yeah, we're not up there with the big walks yet, but we actually purposely keep it small.
It's a meander.
It's a meander,
around
okay.
Park. You know, we have to actually keep it a smaller, it's kind of like a circular walk that you do. A lot of our clients can't participate in a long walk or any kind of, you know, marathon or anything like that. So I think it's probably about a quarter of a mile is actually the route. But what happens is, and we have prizes for this, is that clients actually will walk it as many times as they can. So there are clients that show up at 8, and I'm not kidding, we have to drag them off of the course at 11:30 because they're trying to get the most laps in. So you can walk a lot of laps, but one of the things we do, because there are a lot of individuals who can't necessarily do the walk, is we have activities going on at the same time. So we're going to have little fun scavenger hunts and different things that people can do so that they're up and active and still involved, but they're maybe not necessarily walking, you know, the fourth mile lap over and over. So, and that's why it's also a little bit shorter of amount of time. It's only a couple hours. So,
very cool. Okay, Deborah.
Yes.
What else do we need to know about Project Independence?
Well, this is how I like to think about that. When you think about your own children or your nieces or nephews or yourself when you were young, what dreams did you have for them or for yourself? A nice job, a safe place to live, a cool car. Whatever those things are, those are the same things that the people we serve have. My friend Bobby, when he was coming up, one of the biggest issues he faced was his folks didn't have a dream for him. But back in those days, it wasn't as standard as it is today that everybody, regardless of their level of disability, has the right and the ability to work in the community. And so, but now, Bobby's been at Marriott and was their International Employee of the Year in 1999.
Wow.
He's been there for over 30 years, and he is fabulous, and he has met his dream. And his dream is working at Marriott in their lobby, and he is down at Irvine. Everybody knows him. and so my last thought is all of the employers out there, all of the people who know employers, I just feel it that everybody who has any business should really look inside and see what kind of job they can help support someone with a developmental disability at. And so if every employer in Orange County made it part of their goal for the next year to hire someone with a disability, we can have full employment instead of probably the highest unemployment rate of any group in the nation, which is close to 87%. So what I really want to do is have full employment at minimum wage for everyone that wants to work.
I love it. Well, everybody, this has been Deborah Marsteller and Tracy Hall with Project Independence here in Orange County. On the show page that you are looking at on your computer, there should be links to the website, Facebook, and Twitter accounts. So go click all of those, follow, like, and support them. Their big walk is coming up on September 27th. If you can't, if you can't go do the walk, think about, you know, making a contribution that goes to a good cause. Ladies, thank you so very much for being here tonight. You are awesome. I'm going to wish you lots of success. And if there's anything else I can do for you, I'm going to tell you offline, I'm already going to send you an email for a couple of ideas I have. So look for
awesome.
That.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much, Garrett. This has really been a pleasure, and we really just appreciate the opportunity to come on.
Oh, you guys, anytime. And I'm going to play a song by a recent guest on the show, Patrick Allen Casey. This song is called Home, and I think it's kind of appropriate given the topic that we've been talking about tonight, and that's helping people. And, again, it's been Project Independence. Go check them out, and we'll be right back after this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to feel that I'm where I belong, searching for a place to call my own. I found it when the lights went down on a stage after all the crowds.
Found you in the strangest place, and I knew it when I saw your face, that you would wrap me up inside your world. The hours turn near somehow, though the times have changed, my heart still sound, knowing that you'll never let me go. And it feels like home.
Independence. Really glad that the ladies were on the show with us tonight talking about their group and what they're doing to help people in the community. And after all, I think that's what we're all here for, is helping folks along the way. Let's get to some celebrity birthdays that may just round out the night for us. And I'm going to say we're going to hopefully pick some people you have heard of, starting with Mr. Kenny Rogers. He's 76, looking not a day over about 48 because of all the plastic surgery he's had. Congratulations, Mr. Kenny Rogers, for turning 76. He's a white-bearded country singer who has sold more than 100 million albums over the course of his career. He's a member of the Country Music Hall of Fame. Before he became famous, all of this, by the way, is on famousbirthdays.com, Rogers attended Jefferson Davis High School. His first band, The Scholars, dissolved after their frontman left to go solo. His two most influential albums were The Gambler and Kenny. He married five times, first to Janice Gordon in 1958, then to Jean in October 1960, then to Margot in October 1964, then to Mary Ann in October 1977, then to Wanda Miller in June of 1997. And he released a song with Dolly Parton called The Greatest Gift of All. I believe that's the new single that the two of them have released in the last few months, and it's actually kind of a cute song. So happy 76th birthday to Mr. Kenny Rogers. We've also got birthdays for Khalees. She's a singer, 35 years old today. She's a singer-songwriter and chef who is known for her hit singles Milkshake and Bossy. She has collaborated with artists like Calvin Harris on tracks like Bounce. Before she was famous, she was kicked out of her parents' house for bad behavior at the age of 16. Her album Kaleidoscope was released in 1998. And here's a little trivia for Khalees. Her album, Khalees Was Here, was nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Contemporary R&B Album. She was married to rapper Nas from 2005 to 2010, and her early albums gained attention thanks to acclaimed production work from Pharrell Williams and the Neptunes. So happy 35th birthday to Khalees. I think she's got a new album and or single that's coming out, and it's really good. And then one of my favorites, who I like more and more the more that I see her, is Miss Hayden Panettiere. She's 25, and she starred as a cheerleader, Claire Bennett, on NBC's Heroes from 2006 to 2010 after gaining fame on One Life to Live as Sarah Roberts. 2 years ago, she started in the TV show on ABC called Nashville. It's going into season 3. And I will tell you, the reason I love Hayden Panettiere now is she sings. And she sings really quite brilliantly. I was in the recording studio this week working on a new song for my new album that's going to be coming out at the end of the year. And my producer, Brian Pothier, was like, well, what do you want to do today? And I said, I think I want to do like a rockabilly song. And so we listened to two or three songs off of the Nashville soundtrack from season 1, Wrong Song. It's a duet she did with Connie Britton, and then also her song Telescope, which went up the charts. And who knew that this spitfire has so much talent in her left little pinky that she does. And I think she's expecting a baby right now with her either fiance or husband, who is a giant hockey player. Anyway, it says she played Cheryl Yost in Remember the Titans, which was produced by Jerry Bruckheimer in 2000. And that means that Hayden Panettiere is 25 years old today. And Kacey Musgraves, love this girl too, 26 years old. She's a country singer who appeared on Nashville Star and released the album Same Trailer, Different Park. She was named New Artist of the Year in 2013 at the CMA Awards, and she independently released 3 albums before appearing on Nashville Star in 2007. She recorded songs like Apologize, See You Again. She was nominated for 4 awards at the 48th Annual Academy of Country Music Awards, and Kacey Musgraves is 26. So with that, I'm going to do something here, if I can find it, is I'm going to play her song from 2013 to round out the show. It's called Follow Your Arrow. I love the song. If you haven't heard it, go out and buy it tonight. And we'll be back live tomorrow night with Friday Night Dance Party with Joseph Eid doing a behind the scenes, and we're going to be playing the entire album that he released this past year called Human. So stay tuned for that, and we'll see you live tomorrow night. Thanks.
Away.
You've been listening to
Rated G Radio.